smile.
Goodness, I need a moment of reflection after that. It was wonderful.
In Tune. Weekdays at 5 on BBC Radio 3.
What can I say? Magnificent.
It's 7:30, and our drama on 3 tonight is a reimagining of Virginia Woolf's Orlando.
I'm Amanda Dalton, and I'm one of the 5 poets who've dramatised Virginia Woolf's Orlando. We've each taken sections of the novel and reimagined them for radio. I worked from the first and last chapters of the book, and also wrote, in the voice of an oak tree, the links that bridge each transformation. Sections 2 to 5 have been created, respectively, by Caroline Bird, Zena Edwards, Karen McCarthy Wolfe, and Hannah Silver. This way of working feels in keeping with the novel's exploration of transformations and of the themes of what changes and what's constant over time. We've each foregrounded different aspects of the book, and in some cases reimagined elements of it for now, its handling of colonialism and sexuality, for example. And we've given voice to several characters who are not given a voice in the novel. Orlando was published in 1928, at the height of Virginia Woolf's career. It's full of comedy and way ahead of its time in its exploration of identity and gender. And it explores time and how we experience time. Orlando's a 16th century adolescent at the start and moves through 500 years of history right up to the present day. Virginia Woolf said she wanted Orlando to be truthful but fantastic. I hope we've managed to convey that spirit.
Perhaps it begins here. The year, 1586. A boy, age 16. Orlando, clumsy, catching his foot as he runs through ferns and hawthorn. Uphill, startling deer, a jackdaw, flying like the wind. To me.
How high you stand, oak tree.
How high I stand. 19 English counties at my feet. The English Channel, wave on wave.
An enormous mansion, like my father's.
To the east, the spires and smoke of London.
All at my feet.
Well, in a manner of speaking, yes.
My father's house, my uncle's. Those 3 big turrets among the trees, that's my uncle's. The heath is theirs. The forest, the pheasants.
Orlando! Orlando, ownership! Ownership is a slippery...
And the deer, the fox, the badger, the butterfly...
Ownership
I like
is...
lying on you, oak tree.
At 16, he's very entitled.
Your roots are the spine of the earth. They're the back of the great stallion I'm riding. The hard deck of a tumbling ship. That sounds good, doesn't it? I tie my heart to you. I tie my tugging, floating heart.
Now what are you doing?
I'm writing a poem. Be quiet.
And all about him settles. The deer step near, the rooks wheel in the clear air, as if the fertility and lust of a summer's evening were woven, web-like all around. See, I can do poetry too.
How I long to hurl myself through the summer air, toss my arms with the oak. I am alone. It's getting dark.
You're late, Orlando.
I'm really starving, hungry. You're losing your leaves.
Time flies. You're late. For the Queen.
The Queen? I'm coming.
Sweet Orlando. You're long. Curled hair, beautiful dark head bent in such reverence to me.
I think Queen Elizabeth's lips just touched my hair. I daren't look up. Her fingers are covered in enormous rings. They're curled like talons, or as if she holds a small globe in one wrinkled hand. And she only has to raise a little for her head to fall. She smells of cupboards full of old furs kept in camphor.
Come.
Disgusting.
Your fine legs.
Rescue me, someone.
A blush, a damask rose. How becoming.
Her breath is really terrible. I might be sick.
This ring?
She's easing it from her wrinkled finger.
My dear Orlando.
Lifting my hand, taking my finger. No.
You will be my treasurer and steward.
Oh, my God. I thought she was trying to marry me.
Wear this ring. These chains. Now bend your knee.
They're the jewelled order of the gut.
Well, the Queen of England is completely in love with me.
Kiss you, Orlando.
Oh, no, please.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. The poor Queen is in love.
Hold my breath. Close my eyes. Think of something
She's
nice.
She's giving him a lot of land.
Entire lands.
She keeps giving him houses.
She's besotted
Think of firm breasts. Think of a summer's day on the hill.
She might be the queen, but she's still flesh and blood.
Think of the gorgeous thighs of that soldier who...
Let me just... Orlando, oh, we mustn't. Someone... Oh, that feels so good. Oh, God.
Orlando! You brazen hussy! Orlando!
Your Majesty! She smashed the mirror. She's collapsed. Fetch the physician. He's broken her heart, Mrs. Grimsteen.
Hurry, girl. Bring a surgeon.
The Queen is dead. Long live the King.
He lies at my feet making love to more girls and boys than I have leaves to bear.
Oh, mix the brown earth and the blue blood.
What?
Oh, let's go drinking.
All right. One more kiss.
I'm suddenly very tired and rather bored. Perhaps I should take a wife.
I speak Italian. In my upper jaw, I have a perfect set of teeth. I am from noble stock. I am fair, florid, and a trifle phlegmatic. I am never without a whippet.
What are you doing, Orlando?
The Great Frost, 1608. 1608? When did it become 1608?
In January?
I didn't mean that... Oh, never mind. Birds freeze in mid-air, fall like...
Will you be always writing when we're married?
An old woman hobbles over the frozen waters, and I think of death, and know I am alone, and that nothing... thicker than a knife's blade, separates happiness
I'm bored,
from melancholy.
And I'm extremely cold.
You frozen, eh?
Right.
Only the oak tree stands unbending. What's that?
It'll be the carnival coming. King James has directed that the river at Greenwich, which is frozen to a depth of 20 feet, is to be swept and decorated.
Really? They'll be skating. Yes!
Yes! Yes!
My clumsy fiancé cannot skate at all. He has no balance.
Beneath me, congealed in the ice, a shoal of eels lies motionless in a trance. I look away, I look up and see an emerald, a glowing meteor, a fox in the snow, yes, a fox in velvet and furs. Is she melon or olive? Is she sharp spur or saddle? And am I a horse on fire? Is she a she? Or a he? Or a they? Or a... Do I hear her him? See them? Taste them? Ice becomes air. They're falcons circling, swooping. Legs of a boy. Hands of a boy. Mouth of a mouth, diving, coming at me, arrow from a quiver. Such a mouth. Eyes fished from the bottom of the sea.
I am Princess Marusha Stanilovska Dagmar Natasha Eliana Romanovich. You may call me Sasha.
Sasha?
I have come to London with the Muscovite ambassador, who is my uncle, to attend the coronation. Stand up. What are you? Get up. Do you speak French?
Sasha, un joli renard, un olivier, un faucon.
Take me away from here. I detest your English mob.
Come with me on horseback. Come to my oak tree.
Orlando, where are you going? Orlando! Who's that foreign woman? Is it a woman? Who the hell is she? I've had enough. The wedding of the century is off. Now fetch me my whippets. I'm leaving.
Sasha, the name of the white Russian fox Orlando kept as a child. A beautiful creature,
soft as snow with teeth of steel. They lie at my feet, wrapped in a great fur cloak.
Oh, for you, you are a field of snow, a universe of cream. You are alabaster carved into goblets filled with deep red wine. If I were to climb this oak tree...
Please, spare me.
From the great height of its highest limbs, you would be an emerald shining. No, glinting. No, radiating. An emerald, precious. You are like nothing I have ever seen.
From the great height of my highest limbs, I can see the ship of the Muscovite Embassy anchored and frozen midstream. It's flying its double-headed black eagle from the mainmast, waving a little in the breeze. I fancy it's saying a rather secretive hello.
I must visit my ship. I need clothes. They are on board.
I don't understand what he's saying.
She goes with him. The sun slung like a blood orange on the cross of St. Paul's. Can I leave this life of mine for a Cossack and a waste of snow? For wild horses, frozen rivers, men who gash each other's throats for lust? Can I live on turnips and black bread and cabbage?
Sasha!
How could I sleep without her in my arms? How could my clumsy feet bear me into a room that did not have her in it?
Sasha!
I will go with her to Russia. On the first dark night, we will fly.
Sasha? Sasha? No! What are you...
He was helping me to move a box.
What, on his knee?
The candlelight deceives your eyes.
He held you, your hand.
No,
no. I'm busy.
Calm yourself. Lie on the floor.
Give him brandy on the bloody mouth.
You lean your head on his shoulder.
Drink this, Orlando. The box was heavy. He was helping me to move the box.
But I saw...
May the gods destroy me if I laid in the arms of a common seaman. I am a Romanovich. You do not think I would stoop so low, this hairy sea brute.
All right.
You are seeing shadows. The candle, it makes...
Yes, you're right. The candle guttering. Sometimes I look into the sky and there's nothing but blackness. Ruin and death covering everything. Our lives ending in the grave. Worms eating us. Sasha, come away with me tonight. Meet me alone. I'll have horses waiting at the inn near Blackfriars at midnight. Will you?
Kiss me. And I kiss you. For your love of beasts, for your gallantry, for the beauty of your legs and your curling hair. You are a banquet of sauerkraut and blinis and every kind of pierogi and vodka. Enough to make a river from the White Sea to the Black Sea.
Sasha.
For you are...
She will come on the third beat. The fifth. She's... Oh, no. The eighth. She is every cloaked figure running to me through the rain like... The tenth. She doesn't
care.
Every clock in the city jangles one on the other, ringing with her deceit. Great guns boom in my head. A swarm of snakes bites my eyes. I think I hear the tearing and rending of my oak tree. She will not come.
Orlando, I'm still standing. I'm perfectly all right. Where are you going?
Dawn breaks on the riverbank and everything cracks apart. Jagged first, then melted into yellow water that races and waves its hands in the air as though it gained its freedom in the night. It's forgotten what it held. The lost souls trapped on shrinking floes. The woman suckling her baby as all around her broke. Old man falling to his knees. Girl closing her eyes tight as she steeled herself to jump into the flood.
Ride your horse up here, will you? Come to me. Look further out.
The ships of the ambassadors. I'm frozen, floating. The French, Spanish, Austrian, Turk.
On the horizon.
Black eagles flying from the masthead. The Muscovite embassy heading out to sea. Going home. Faithless, mutable, fickle devil. Deceiver, bloody adulterous bitch. Sasha! I am alone.
Alone. Orlando retires to his house in the country to sleep. A deep sleep. As if in hibernation or a trance.
Orlando!
Nothing. And all my calling and the dog set to bark beneath his window and the changing season bringing a great gale to blow through my every branch. Cymbals, drums, a gorse bush placed beneath his pillow. Mustard plasters on his toes. He doesn't wake. Until...
What are you all doing in my bedroom?
As if he's woken from a single night's sleep in a bad mood.
Get out!
Wanting only solitude and to write. He is still himself, and yet some change has taken place within the chambers of his brain.
I love her. I want to die. I want to die, but first I want to write the perfect metaphor for dying of heartbreak. It's like being poisoned by the juices of your own tongue. It's like clawing out your heart, then waking up with a bloody hole in your chest surrounded by fascinated medical students. It's like yawning so deeply your innards dislodge. To be destroyed by something beautiful is like being actually physically irrevocably blinded by a sunset. Or having your eyes pecked out by a red-breasted robin on Christmas Eve. It's like being knifed in the face by your childhood governess after offering her the smallest piece of Turkish delight. It's like being abandoned by your mother, then crafting a cardboard cutout of your mother as a replacement, only to have that burned down in a freak house fire. These metaphors are getting slightly unwieldy, Orlando. It's like going to confession and making the priest laugh so hard tears stream from his eyes and he has a small heart attack and moves to Paris to lurk around the Champs-Élysées hoping to attack girls. I've forgotten what I meant to be describing. Oh yes, love. Get it back, Orlando. Being destroyed by something beautiful is like... Yes, it's like being drowned in champagne. It's like seeing a severed head on a spike outside the palace and being oddly attracted to the spike. Wait, what am I talking about? This makes no sense, Orlando. Start again. I love her. I want to die.
Go away! I'm being creative.
Shall I empty your waste paper basket, my lord?
Oh, sure. You want to steal my ideas, is that it? Sell my crumpled first drafts to the highest bidder? Supplement your maid's income with my discarded scraps of genius?
Will you be coming down for dinner at all this week?
I have given myself up to a life of extreme solitude. I am a nobleman afflicted by the love of literature.
It's just that cook is baking a crumble.
Apple or rhubarb?
Plum.
Very well. Bring a large bowl to my room if you must. And a jug of wine. Though I shall taste naught but ash, for I am numb to all earthly delights.
Every night I take my lonely lamp down to the mausoleum. I exist in a limbo, a netherworld. I write feverishly in the half-light. The echo of my own voice sustains me. When a writer is heartbroken, he sees only the landscape of his love. The sky is emblazoned with her name. God, what's her name? Sasha, Sasha, of course, who I love and who slaughtered my heart upon the altar of her fickleness. Well, that's good. I'm going to write that on a postcard and send it to her anonymously.
You slaughtered my heart upon the altar of your fickleness. Signed,
Question mark.
I chuckle proudly into my brandy. I play a very satisfying game of chess with myself. I win. No one understands me but the dead.
What?
With custard.
Yes, goddamn you! Now get out!
I am worn out by the extremity of my suffering. I cannot remember the last time I heard a joke or shook a hand. But no matter, I have books to keep me company. The solace of my talent. New page. What's the title? Deathly Love, yes. Or even Debilitating Desire. The debilitating desire suffered by the great man. Or The Solitary Poet. The debilitating desire suffered by the great solitary poet man. It's a sonnet. No, a sonnet sequence. How many did Shakespeare write? 154. Then I shall write 155.
I wake up, retching on hairballs of absence, and my fried egg skids around the pan on a greasy layer of lac.
Fabulous. I've never fried an egg in my life. My imagination knows no bounds.
A tiny portrait of me is trapped inside the golden locket of her left eye. My soul is but a crass memento worn around the neck of our past.
I cannot actually recall her eyes or her neck, but I'm sure she had both.
My lord!
Not now, woman!
Sir, there is a foul substance leaking down through the floorboards of your room into the hallway below. Visiting tradesmen keep asking if someone has died.
Oh, come on! How long have I been in my heartbroken hibernation? 3 weeks? A month?
20 years, sir.
What?
Look at yourself. Your hair trails on the ground like a wedding dress. Your fingernails are as long as swords. Your room is literally sprouting. Can you not see the difference in my face? I was 19 when you first announced your hiatus from society. Now I am 39.
You have always looked haggard to me.
For the love of all that is holy, let me run you a bath.
A bath? No. Yes. The bathwater will be a metaphor for the painful effects of betrayal leaving my body. The shadow being scoured from my resurrected heart as
it... Also, Mrs. Gibbons would appreciate her breakfast trays back and all of these hundreds of mugs.
The maid cuts my hair and my talon fingernails. It takes 12 rounds of black bathwater until I'm clean. Each bubble symbolises a brimming brain cell. The soap is a simile for...
Can you scrub your own bits, or shall I?
I love her. I want to die.
I know. You've said.
Mrs. Grubsworthy scrunches her nose at the stench of it. She does not realise this is a metaphor. She is not well read. She thinks an unwashed man is just an unwashed man. A bucket of filth is just a bucket of filth. Oh, for such a sparsely togged brain. How light life's duvet must feel against her skin. What summer cotton. Speak to her.
I envy your simplicity, Mrs. Grubsworthy.
That's not my name.
I am incapable of thinking the sky is blue or the grass is green. I look out the window and think the cloudy sky is a handkerchief snotted into by the nose of God, or the grass is the stubble on the chin of the globe. Oh, Mrs. Grubsworthy, how I envy the empty notebook of your head. Another metaphor by Jupiter. Contented to leave this world unknown and leave behind you nothing but a potting shed, a cracked tureen, a knitted cloth, whereas I am doomed to burn like a meteor. It is a sad fate, Fame. If only I were like you, Mrs. Grubsworthy.
My surname is Davis.
Content to go down in obscurity with the mole catcher and the stonemason, the hermit and the butcher's dog. If only I didn't wish for my life to mean something.
Cow! All done.
Did you just punch me with the soap?
I'll towel you down.
Very well, if you must.
I am struck by a sudden thought. Great poets must drink with other greats. Mingle with peers. Fraternise, converse, compare manifestos over tiny glasses of port. It is my creative duty. I must socialise.
Mrs. Grubsworthy, please invite Mr. Green to tea.
Who?
I despair of these Philistines.
He's only the most famous, important poet and critic of the age.
The trees whisper to me conspiratorially.
The stones in the rockery give me sardonic deadpan stares that only the stones and I understand. The ivy shudders with desire when I brush past it. The sunrise is a metaphor for my new beginning.
I'm still honing my voice.
Oh, don't worry. I'm not laughing at you, my boy.
Oh, good.
I'm laughing at your terrible writing.
Maybe he's not a literary expert. Maybe he knows nothing.
They're young these days. You think everyone's entitled to a unique sense of self. Bollocks! The art of poetry is dead in England.
What about Shakespeare?
Hack! Total hack! Only a few individuals possess individuality. Myself, my late mother, and a handful of my London friends whom I publish bi-quarterly in my journal. The rest of humanity are just simpering mimics, echoes clothed in flesh.
I do experimental poetry as well as pastoral. Listen, I want to slice a line in the sand with a samurai letter opener to see if she's left me a message in the bowels of the beach.
What the hell is a samurai letter opener?
I want to make a voodoo doll of her and whack its head on my erogenous zones.
That's simply disturbing. Read me something honest!
Sorry, I thought that was honest. Let me find another. Lovers salt their lips with honesty, then hydrate you with a murky drink. They erode your body with waves of joy. They wear piano wire necklaces, then blame you for their headlessness. You think I'm a joke? Is there not a single scrap of merit in any of me? Am I entirely worthless?
You yourself are worth a grand sum, my boy, as the quality of this wine would attest. But your writing, yes, that is of no worth.
I thought I was good.
Don't cry. Oh, my God. Stop crying.
What am I doing wrong? You say it's not honest, but all I do is try and be honest. To speak from my soul.
Well, maybe you have a dishonest soul.
What? What does that mean? What do you...
Your torment is not unprecedented, Orlando. Your pain is not art.
But my pain is all I have. What about a lifetime of pain? That'll be art, won't it? What if I live for 1,000 years? What if I'm 1,000 people in one person? That'll be art. You'll see, I have the entire history of the world inside me. A unique voice.
Most likely you have no voice. Most likely your deepest secret buried in the caverns of your heart is that, my lad, you have absolutely nothing to say.
I do so!
What? I love her and I want to die?
Yes!
What is her name?
Oh, it's true! Time has stolen my muse. Once I wrote because my heart was a wound, and the wound was a mouth with a name on its lips. Saskia, or Sally, or whatever it was.
Heartbreak was your identity.
But without it, without that edifying pain, I'm just...
An aristocrat with a hobby?
Oh, God, please don't say that. I will slit my throat right here with this cheese knife.
Well, that would be an act of originality.
Please, I need to be respected for my mind. Tell me I have a crumb of genius. Please, Mr. Green. Please.
I place my massive checkbook on the table between us. I push my massive checkbook towards him. He looks down at my massive checkbook.
You do have some potential.
And I am strange and special and unique.
I will mentor you in exchange for a modest yearly pension.
And my life means something profound?
Sure.
I knew it. I'm going to write a really, really long poem about an oak tree. I'm going to call it The Oak Tree.
Sounds seminal.
Burn! Burn! Burn it all! It's all rubbish! I will write only honest words from now on.
Please be careful with the fire, sir.
My God, Mrs. Grubsworthy, you're looking practically dead.
Oh, I think I'm looking pretty sprightly, sir, all things considered.
And yet, I do not look a day over 21. My body must have retained its youth due to the power of the passion in my blood.
Oh, you are taking an exceptionally long time to grow the hell up.
How dare you speak to me like that?
I'm 95. What are you going to do? Fire me? While you've been fiddling with metaphors in your room for 70-odd years, the rest of us have been learning to live.
I'm trying, but I am all art and no life. I am trying to write myself into existence, but how can I if I don't know who I am? What if I'm writing the wrong Orlando? Mrs. Grubsworthy? Mrs. Grubsworthy, you can't just die when I'm in the middle of a revelation. Mrs. Grubsworthy! She looks so real. So truthfully dead. This is a visual metaphor telling me to leave. I am a newborn babe in the dawn of my identity. My arms and legs mere feelers. Now there I go again, talking like a prick. Why can't I translate the contents of my soul into language? What is the use of a soul if it remains unread? I must find myself. I must go somewhere real. A place with an adventurous-sounding name. Canterbury. No, Constantinople.
To Constantinople. I'm spread so wide and high, I see Orlando, Ambassador Extraordinary, cross the ocean, safe landing. And who's that traveling with him? Is she a maid? A lover? A lady in waiting? I wait for the wind to turn, so I might hear what they're saying.
Truth, let yourself be known. Do not hold your hungry tongue.
Truth, bear witness, offspring of justice, fathered by what is, mothered by that which will always be.
Truth, pregnant as an overdue season, guaranteed to have its ripening, you are summoned.
Expose right from wrong.
Shatter us with your song. You might rip the lids from our eyes, but it is time.
All illusions raised to the ground. Open our hearts. We let you in. We vow to stand firm. In your electric wind. My name is Grace. I am 22. For 14 summers I have fetched and served, washed sheets, pressed them flat. One lifetime before I was a slave. Two lifetimes before I was free. At sunup my body was my own. My mind one with the wise Boabab. And at sundown, the chains of slavery claimed me.
I, Orlando, a Cornelius in the making, converted away from the corruptions of court as a truth-maker to truth-seeker, I come to Constantinople, questing for new verity, room to breathe afresh. Omani incense mixed with sesame, cumin, cinnamon, sumac.
This scent, this sky is familiar to me. An ocean breeze, blowing warm from the south, mercifully reminds me. I am Dagaba, Dogon. This I will not forget.
The heat curls the air till rust-red roofs undulate with the call to prayer. While dogs bark in the white stone alleys and peacocks squall their mating call in the courtyard. More ink! Grace?
Yes, Master.
Yes, Grace, I need more ink. Fetch me some.
Yes, Master,
and
Grace,
of course. Come close. I also need you to make me a platter of food. Pomegranate, flatbread, lamb, sweet cake. I want you to place it all carefully into this basket with this note. You will take it to the well near the wine cellar in the market. Tell no one, Grace. Do you hear me? No one.
Yes, Master.
And make haste with it. There's talk of revolution. So quick, get to your task.
Yes, Master. Orlando Master requested I come along with him to Constantinople. He favors shiny things. For his collection, his menagerie of comfort is 52 persons strong. Orlando Master. Master? Oh, again he sleeps. Orlando Master holds magic between his eyelids, yet he does not seem to know it. And I am sent to run mysterious errands. In Allah's name, what is this? Three figures in white, faces pale as the moons, eyes like milky pools laced with troubled sky. They enter not by foot, but by float, skimming the marbled floor, their gowns rippling a sigh. A gentle grief comes into my heart. I know not why. They lean over Orlando Master and each place a hand over his eyes, his lips, his chest, and his breathing becomes deeper and slower. Then they speak, not with their mouths, but in my mind. And they do not see me.
Purity, Sister Modesty, Sister Virtue, Orlando, a trick cog within the masculine wheel. The world, man's timepiece, wound by men's words, is changing its truths, like the eclipse of a penetrating sun by a cool-hearted moon. The magic of DNA, shifting for adaptation. There is more to blood than wetness and red. Orlando, destined to heal a masculine wound.
And they disappear in wists of labyrinthine mist out of the window. To them I have been invisible. Many days pass. No clamor or shout can rouse him. Orlando Master only quivers and wakes when ready, when revolt is imminent.
Grace?
Yes, Master.
How long, Grace? How long have I been asleep?
7 days, Master.
Did you get my message where it needed to go?
Yes. I gave it to the old lady who sat begging by the well. Nothing but a heap of rags. Who was that?
And what did she say to you?
Nothing. She just gave me a set of scales. 2 feathers, 1 black, 1 white.
Good. You did well, Grace. Oh, I need to get up. I feel my body has atrophied.
My master stands. The sheets fall to the floor and I can only cover my mouth to hide my shock.
What is it, Grace?
I shall fetch a mirror. The tall mirror.
It is not atrophy that I feel in my body. It is a new gentleness of muscle that holds up my bones. Fatty mounds where was once my lithe, flat chest. Where my manhood would greet me of a morning, there is now a flat bed of hair and... My calves, however, are the same.
What do you think this is, Grace?
Shapeshift.
I am soft curve and sublime enclave.
Once knife, now spoon.
This body has a different use, but I am the same. I dare not even question why this happened, but it is clear this transformation was non-negotiable.
Truth. The seal is broken. A secret no more. A lightning bolt cannot match your incandescent strike.
A phoenix does not question the flames that birthed it.
It has begun! Hand me those pants in the trunk over there and get my pistols. Quick, Grace! We do not have much time. We have to leave this way out of here, otherwise we'll be caught. Or worse still, seen by someone who will try to rescue us. Now is my chance, or they will never let me go.
What? I don't understand.
Later, Grace. I'll explain later. Give me your hand!
An Orlando madam grabs my hand, almost pulling my arm from its socket. I'm spun around to a full gallop. I cannot believe. Holding my hand in a gesture of humanity. To save me. To save me. Grace.
What a sight. The city burns orange, bleeding into the deep violet sky.
Here. The gypsy women gave us a change of clothes. They should fit. Let's go to the river.
Finally, Grace.
Ha. Madam?
No more of those damned suffocating wigs like rugs causing sweats to pour down my neck in torrents. No more tight garters that cut the circulation in my calves or shoes that pinch. No more layers of burdensome cloth. Just this, Grace.
And she splashes the sweet water onto her new but familiar body, raises her chin and her arms to the sky. Her nakedness sings. The soft liquid runs rivulets along her shoulders, drips from her breasts and wrists.
What do you think of my transformation?
I saw them.
Saw who?
The spirits that came to you, made you changeling while you slept. I saw them. I have always thought you vibrated female energy. So what you have become, you are not unusual to me. Where I am from, the Nomo, the High Priests teach that we have no certainty who we will become until we are 5 years old. Then we are named girl, boy, and...
Do not be shy to tell the truth, Grace. You must consider yourself free under these stars this night.
Orlando, madam, is now Eve. She and Grace are bound to a destiny of banishment from the garden. A servant must shapeshift from visible to invisible seamlessly. A slave, too, learns quickly that presence of the body is all in the mind.
Look how worn her hands are from toil, scrubbing sheets whose rose-scented folds I have enjoyed many a carefree night in slumber. She is more than made. She takes a form I can hold in the palm of my gaze as I would the skeleton of a sparrow. Such a slight frame, yet she has held her form incredulously under her tethered title of slave. You are a very fine negress. You take the name Grace and surpass its meaning, my friend. May I call you friend?
If there is anything these unchanging stars have taught me, it is my insignificance and... my significance. We all need a friend, especially when we are alone amongst many. On the gypsy trail, Orlando Madam finds new passion. Enough to take up with one of the young gypsy men, but it's Rustam, an elder male of the clan who watches Orlando closely. And I know he knows I watch him. Orlando Madam is oblivious.
Rustam, oh Rustam, stern-faced Rustam. You and your kind are blessed with a remarkable life. I am envious. Such constrictions of courtly duties. This freedom of yours is an invigorating existence.
It is a free life indeed. For centuries we have wandered this land.
Wandering, aimless and free. Wonderful. More tobacco for my pipe, please.
It is not aimless wandering. We follow trails hundreds of years old. But we are outsiders for the exact same reason. We are considered rogues and thieves. Persecution is an outsider's poisonous cousin. We must keep our distance from the cities under pain of death. Freedom comes at a cost.
The world is changing, Rustam. You may be accepted yet.
We do not want to be accepted. This is our life. And only my fighting white cockerel and the ravens on the battlefield determine the turning of the wheel of fortune.
The black and white feather the old woman gave me. It was you.
More cider. I wish to celebrate my anniversary with you. 1 whole month in my newfound gypsy life.
I do not like this. Orlando, madam, sits too close to this elder. She forgets herself as a woman.
Work. It is our tradition. Everyone must do their share. It is prakaza, bad luck, for the whole caravan if any one of us does not play their part. So do not let night air and alcohol seduce you.
Rustam, do not stare at me so scornfully. I only wish to play my part. And at any point, if you feel I am of no use, these pearls are some fortune. And in any instance that you should fall upon bad luck, I have 365 rooms in my house. You could all come to England and stay with me. I have acres and acres for you to roam around on.
Orlando, madam, you walk too close to the edge.
What do you mean, Grace?
There is balance here. Pay this some mind. After 3 more weeks, things begin to change. Each day, the air grows more and more heavy with restlessness.
Grace, I am beginning to miss England. The birds, the dewy mists, the approach of spring. My hands have been bloody too many times from the work. I do not see this as the life for me. I need you to help me prepare a strategy to get us both back home.
I shall not be returning with you.
I see. I can understand. I will not send for you. You are your own woman.
I know. And you have a lot to learn about being one, Orlando, madam. You have a lot to learn about being able to walk with your head high and bowed at the same time.
I shall not forget you, Grace.
Nor I you. 2 nights later, Orlando, madam, slips away, crossing the river we bathed in when we first arrived. What is the truth about the shackles of Orlando, madam's life before? Or the shiny ones she now possesses? She will look out over the Mediterranean landscape when she reaches high enough ground. It will be a splendid sight for her to behold. Arrival to home. But there will be no oak tree in sight.
And so, Orlando is back at sea in another vessel built from oak. If I were whimsical, I would say built from my sisters and brothers. 2,000 trees for a single ship. Hewn, stripped, seasoned, sawn, shaped. Things change, things stay the same. Orlando comes home as a woman, frocked and corseted, sailing into a new century, but somehow, still Orlando.
Oh, the warmth and glitter of the sun. Not unlike the glitter in that Turk's eye, who thought he was getting a bargain when I sold him a single pearl, so I might sail home to England, dressed in all manner of feminine finery. Even if I say so myself, these are mesmerizing limbs. Oh, I could drift off and sleep forever out here, though the sun is a little fierce on my newly delicate skin.
Oh, poor Lady Orlando. You whose pearly complexion must be protected at all costs.
What I wouldn't do for a parasol right now. I'd fetch it myself, but this heat is very soporific. It reminds me of when I swung in a hammock under the verdant boughs of my dear oak.
My first memory of her takes me back to the Great Hall. Not a memory she cares to recall, though she did note it down in that vellum-clad volume she boldly announces as her memoir.
I wonder if the bosun might oblige. This corsetry is unfathomably tight. Perhaps I could undo the laces just a notch.
For it was my lifeless skull that hung from those wormy oak beams. My sunken cheeks, as dear Orlando described them, on a head the colour of an old football and more or less the shape of one, save for a strand of coarse, dry hair like the hair on a coconut. A head she, then a daredevil boy, first lunged and slashed at with a child-sized blade. That was a bone of contention, fine as a fish spine stuck in the back of one's throat, for my collar was deeper than the teak of any polished prow.
Hold on, is that the bosun descending the mast? I'm probably pretending to scout for pirates while ogling any inch of flesh that's escaped from the prison of this dress. Or has he read my mind and gone to fetch my umbrella?
If there's anyone that might read your mind, it's I, whom you christened simply the Blackamoor's Head. A head which, I shall remind you, your grandfather struck from the shoulders of a vast pagan who started up under the moon in the barbarian fields of Africa. At least, that's what you wrote. But what time, other than when the moon is full and strong as long-fermented palm wine, would a mother rise up to search for her children in the tall grass? Boys and girls, precious as lions' teeth and vulnerable as gazelles.
children, your noble lords, hunted for sport. Those thrusting knights and squires who stalked every living beast in your long-lived queen's wooded realm, that monarch Elizabeth, whose orange periwig hid a noggin most coconut-like and single-stranded. Yes, and now the truth must be known. For this, he, whose head was knocked clean off its broad shoulders, is actually a she, who understands too well your newfound curves and tenderness, Orlando. Even if all my mortal, and might I add, once exquisite remains, exist only above the neck.
My Lady Orlando, Captain Nicholas Benedict Bartolus at your service. Permit me to erect an awning to protect those rosy lips and cheeks from the sun's most passionate caress. I'll not see you suffer from such brutalities.
Brutalities? Remember me, Orlando, that nameless blackamoor whose sons and daughters knew the pitch and ache in the bloated belly of a crowded galleon, an ocean's width apart in style and stench from your capacious quarters on this shapely vessel they aptly call the Enamored Lady.
Bosun! Fetch Lady Orlando's parasol at once!
These deprivations, disguised as care, are your burden now, dear child. It's a wise woman who knows how to butter the difference.
Mint tea, Captain. Now all I need is a hookah pipe like the one the gypsies taught me to smoke. Although then I was free in the way a woman never is. I'll never be able to crack a man over the head, run him through, never mind sentence him to death or lead an
army. Lady Orlando, you've the spirit of a Boadicea.
I'll be bereft of adventure. All I might do is pour tea and ask my lords how they like it. Do you take sugar?
Is that sugar, you say, sweet Orlando? What an arduous task. Lifting a little rock from a silver bowl with silver tongs and dropping it into a china cup stirred with a silver spoon you were born socking. Consider my strongest, most bold son, Kwame, whose passion for merrymaking was hacked to the stump like the cane he cut in acres of blistering toil. Think of his back bent as he loaded up a full 500 weight of this honeyed crop with nothing but raw yam and rage to fuel his beating heart.
Madam, forgive me, but duty calls. I shall return in a heartbeat.
Of course, Captain. You know where I'll be.
After all, a lady is somewhat confined. These petticoats weigh a ton.
Confined? I don't believe you understand the meaning of the word.
When I was male, I thought all women should be obedient, chaste, and exquisitely apparelled. What a joke. Yes, these silks are sumptuous, but so voluminous. Why, if I fell overboard, who knows if I'd float like a jellyfish or sink as a stone?
Try swimming with your hands fettered in iron, weighty as a cannonball.
I'm a gull's feather blown in a sea breeze. Male or female, I don't know which is the greater ecstasy. And nothing's more heavenly than to resist and yield. To yield and resist.
As dear Atua, my firstborn, could only resist. Her fiery nature would never yield to any pox-infested sailor.
These men deny a woman teaching, lest she laugh at them. What fools they make of us, and what fools we are.
Speak for yourself. Us Akan women fought tooth and nail to maintain the matriarchy in matters of learning and property.
But ignorant as they keep us, and poor as we are, it's better to be clothed with poverty and ignorance, which are the darker garments of the female sex.
Darker?
Better to quit a manly love of rule and power, if, as a woman, I might know more deeply the raptures of the human spirit. Contemplation, solitude, love.
And so, Orlando returned to that cradle of metropolitan civilization and cultural hodgepodge, London, to know the city afresh with her new eyes and softer breast.
Black is the day when I return to Blackfriars and am bound to depart on pain of incarceration. Not one, but two of them. Bow Street runners, a new breed.
Madam, it is by the power invested in me, I regret to inform you that given you are dead, as in demised, as in a doornail, it is therefore impossible under Articles 18.3, paragraph C of His Majesty's most distinguished law that you could, A, be alive...
Is the man blind? Can't he see the bluest blood pumping through these translucent veins?
In my village, we never cared two hoots for sons. My mother's mother's grandmother owned all the land from Mount Afaja to that hideous castle glowering on the coast at El Mina, in the place they now call Ghana.
Given that you be dead, demised, as in a dodo, it is also deemed unlawful.
Unlawful? If there's anything unlawful, it's this lunacy.
Therefore, and hitherto, and given that you're a woman, which amounts to much the same thing as deceased to exist...
Orlando, take it from me. Better you gather your stiffened frock and flee to the country incognita, while a variety of men spend your father's ill-gotten gains, sorting
under
out this mess.
Section 28 of His Majesty's. You are permitted to reside in
His
your ancestral
Majesty.
Residence.
Personally, I'd be happy if I never set foot there again.
Oh, my lord, what a palaver, you're home at last.
I am indeed, Mrs. Grimstitch. Here, take my cloak.
Oh, my lord, I mean, my lady, it really is you.
Well, and who else is it going to be?
No, sir, I mean, madam, my lady.
Yes, yes, Mrs. Grimstitch. I've no time to waste. Have one of the chambermaids light a fire up in the attic room.
It's already lit, my lady. I'll have your coffee sent straight up, just as you like it.
And ink. I need ink.
The letter S. Such sibilance. Such supple subtlety. It's the serpent winding its way around the tree trunk in the poet's Eden. What was I thinking?
Ah, yes. Trees again. I'd rather be under the sheltering branches of her precious oak.
Oh, there are still too many of these sinful reptiles in the first stanzas of the oak tree.
Better to freeze than roam these gloomy corridors, lit only by glaring ancestral faces. All men who stole my grandmother's land and named it their own.
My only audience, this cozy attic, and my muse, Oak. Even with a mere fingernail of moonlight, I can see her on the distant hillside. Such grace in those ancient leafy limbs. Sweet grace. I wonder how she does now.
And finally, you remember that fine negress, as you called her, whose wisdom trailed over your head like frankincense.
Where's the paper?
Oh, so much dust. Is that the old globe I used to spin for hours and dream of sailing to... Oh, my goodness. Oh, I knew this disembodied creature well. To think he's been here all these years. A skull that held a young boy's world in awe.
Oh, I'd like to know what your disdain amounts to. And yet your heart beats with an empathy I must encourage. Listen, Orlando. Hear my spirit rustle in the wind.
That's better. I can breathe now. And yet I did mistreat you. Slashing and bashing. Poking your eye sockets with the tip of my blade. Did I not think of the soul who once resided inside that wizened head?
All you need to know, the wind whispers.
The head I strung up, the swing and batter in the wind. The wind blowing this way, blowing that, blowing through this house like blood through veins. And you, poor blackamoor, left buried under a pile of papers, ink and peacock feathers, 1,000 miles and more from home. Your only friend, the spider and its web. What life's worth living without friendship? And I, alive 200 years, I'm still alone, save for my loyal oak. Imagine, a woman whose best friend's a tree. What kind of life is this?
Yes, Orlando. Flee to London, find a lover, live your life. you'd turn to compost here.
My tree will always be here for me, but beauty fades, and I'll only turn to compost here. Life and a lover.
And so Orlando left me there, in the Great Hall, or so she thought, and made her way to London once again. She stayed some time, made friends with great wits, with men of letters and women of the night. Shame she never found her way to Blackheath, where she might have crossed paths with my beloved cousin Ignatius Sancho. A sorry omission, given he was the first African to vote in an English election, and his knowledge of literature famous. And the first stroke of midnight sounds. A gloomy fog descends, curling its charcoal edges into every crevice, until a huge blackness sprawls over the whole of London, then rises up and engulfs the city. I rather like it. And as the clock strikes, I too ascend, my efforts here, if not yet resolved, then at least concluded. All is darkness. All is doubt. All is confusion. The 19th century has begun. Perhaps it's to try and escape the bruised and sullen skies that Orlando leaves Blackfriars again. She's going to hide away in the country, alone. Deny this new damp age is born. She fears it'll break her. What of life and a lover now? A lover for Orlando in this climate?
What Orlando requires to lead her gracefully into the 19th century is a narrator of substance, a guiding voice of undeniable masculinity, for a lady must have someone to lean upon, even if he is merely a chronicler emerging from the moistness of the 19th century. Like mould spreading across a page, his footsteps made behind the scenes somehow, simulated in a little box of gravel. But nevertheless, present and ready to chaperone our hero, Win Orlando, a weak woman who only yesterday spent hours blushing in her drawing room as she observed the chair legs modestly clothed, the ivy subduing the nakedness of the windows, the tea cozy covering the voluptuousness of the pot. Orlando blushed iterations of shame and modesty as she finally resigned herself to what she regards as the most desperate of remedies, to yield completely and submissively to the spirit of the age and take a husband.
Marmaduke Bonthrop Shelmerdine, Esquire.
Orlando.
Could you pass the cream? You're a woman, Shell. You're a man, Orlando.
Certainly not.
Absolutely not. Prove it.
I'm blushing. I've been blushing for the last 2 days. I'm blushing like a woman. And so are you.
I am. I am a trifle flushed. But that's because I'm suddenly passionately in love with you. And men may also blush, only we blush concerning important things, such as out of modesty when being asked to impart details of one's adventures around the Cape Horn, or when one's manliness is suddenly doubted.
Oh, I didn't mean to question your manliness, only I suddenly felt, along with your unquestionably noble manliness and my sudden passionate love for you, a certain familiar...
Now look here, Orlando. In my rough, manly work on the open seas, I encounter all sorts of peril and trial. I have been wounded and subdued, often misled, and very hardened, and it is my greatest, most masculine wish to guard a lady from this, to ensure that she shall not enter danger nor temptation.
Yes.
But the fairer sex need men like myself to guard them against such offences as they are foolish. And you, Orlando, you do not seem foolish. So how could it be possible you're a woman?
I can assure you, Shell, that I am foolish. Utterly foolish. I have wasted centuries writing an epic poem about an oak tree. Can you think of anything more foolish? And just yesterday, between episodes of Modest Blushing, I spent considerable time looking at an ink splodge and decorating it with wings and whiskers till it became a round-headed monster, something between a bat and a wombat. So you see, my nature is not for invention or artistic creation, but for sweet ordering, arrangement and decisions on women's things, buttering muffins and purchasing crinolines. And I have certainly never hacked off heads or lain with loose women with adorable dimples and soft bellies among treasure sacks in the hold of pirate ships on summer nights when the tulips were abloom and the bees buzzing off whopping old stairs.
Really? Because that sounded rather specific.
I assure you I am dead.
I'm sorry?
Oh, did I say I was dead? I meant, I assure you, I am a woman. Look here, I have documentation proving it. This arrived today, confirming the matter of my sex and some guff about property ownership. And if it turns out that you are not also a woman, and I am not yet convinced on this matter, then you may protect me from all danger and temptation, just as you say. Now, although we only met yesterday, when I sprained my ankle and you galloped upon me in a scene reminiscent of those described in 19th century novels, in order to assuage the throbbing sensation I have on my left ring finger, due, it seems, to the swelling condensation and the spirit of the Victorians, which has got not only into the muffins, crumpets, and all that abominable ivy, but also right into the centre of me, I suggest you marry me. If, that is, you can convince me that you are indeed a man.
But what must I do to prove it? I know. Mark this. I bow with solemn grace.
That proves nothing. Look, I can bow with solemn grace too.
Ah, that proves we are both men.
It proves we're both women.
Impossible. Women don't converse with each other. They don't laugh together. When a man is out of the room, women have no enjoyment in each other's company. They do not chat. They scratch.
I suppose one could call it that.
How is your geography?
Appalling. I believe that to travel south is to travel downhill.
Maths?
Even worse. However, I like to ride six horses at a gallop over London Bridge of a Sunday afternoon. But what am I saying? I'm all woman.
It seems to me that you look the world in the face.
I would not dream of it. I only ever take a sidelong glance, full of subtlety, even of suspicion. What was that?
What?
There, you hiccuped.
I most certainly did not.
You hiccuped like a girl.
No, no. It wasn't me. I must show you. Come here. Give me your hand. Touch my chest. Feel. Flat. Well, almost flat. No breasts.
Yet you do have nipples, just like mine. Here, feel my chest. Rather flat too, you see. All this proves is that neither of us have given birth.
I know. Let's dance. Come. Take my hand. Now, I take your hand. I lead, you see? I'm leading like a man. I mean, obviously, because I am a man. One, two, three. One, two, three. Extraordinary. Mind blown.
There's nothing for it, Shell. You must strip. Are you swooning, Shell? Swooning like a woman in breeches?
I am not. I do not swoon. I pursue and I conquer.
I refuse and I yield.
I perceive and I reason.
I falter and I crumble.
I demonstrate and I prove.
Go on then.
What?
Reason. Prove. Demonstrate. Stop skipping coquettishly about the matter. Be a man.
Fine. I shall take off my breeches for you.
Oh, goody. I'm partial to a nice pair of breeches.
What are you doing? Are you dressing in my clothes?
Let's see if it's the clothes or the clothes filler that makes the man. Well, these fit very well. May I try your shirt? Yes. How do you feel?
Weak. Vulnerable. I must say you're very handsome in my breeches.
I must say you're most attractive in your skin. Very shapely thighs.
Strong shoulders.
Delicate elbows. Oh, I'm suddenly aroused.
There, then, proof! You are a man!
How so?
Women have no desires. Only affectations.
Who says?
I'm not sure. Isn't it general knowledge?
If I may interrupt the lovebirds at this juncture, Shelmadine is likely referring to the work of the eminent doctor William Acton, who writes, and I quote, The majority of women, happily for them, are not very much troubled by sexual feeling of any kind.
Well then, if a man says so, then that must be how it is. Surely I am mistaken. I'm not aroused. I'm merely damp.
Yes, that's my understanding of the matter. Gentle women may submit to their husbands, but only to please them.
Ah, so if you are my husband...
Then you acknowledge my masculinity?
I'm willing to investigate the matter further, and I do not think I should marry you before I've had definitive proof. A woman cannot marry a woman. They would cancel each other out.
Oh, Orlando!
Oh, Shell!
And then the eager pair did a few things that shall be left mainly to your imagination, for nothing is more distasteful than being forced to hear the kissing, smooching and squelching noises of lovers, whatever their genders. You only need to know that Orlando did a great deal of gasping, so much so that one could be forgiven for mistaking her noises for some kind of pleasurable hysterical paroxysm. But that, of course, would be impossible, as she is a woman, and women gain no pleasure from such forms of peripheral excitement. Or if she had, her fate would be suicide, murder, or deportation to Australia, none of which, as the listener shall presently hear, will occur.
There, you see?
Mm-hmm.
I have made love with many a woman, and I assure you, that is how it is done.
I agree. I have also made love with many a woman. That is definitely how it is done.
So, the matter's finalised. Sorry, did you just say...
Oh, yes. I've made a whoopee with a great many.
You...
Of course, when I was a man.
When you were...
Yes. Well, no, always. At least whilst wearing a man's breeches. I forget we only just met. I was a man for a couple of centuries. But let's not go on about it.
I'm suddenly doubting everything.
Oh, my darling, lovely Shell... I think perhaps it would help if now I make love to you.
But that's impossible.
You're shaking.
Your eyes are filled with the oddest urge I've ever seen.
Lust.
Yes. Yes. Take me. I am yours.
You are mine.
I, again, find myself in the awkward position of being a narrator, without the vocabulary required for which to narrate. One might say that Orlando became a man, and then a woman. A man and a woman at once, yes, that's it. A woman beyond woman, a person both man and woman, and neither, and more. That he possessed Shelmadine like... And it was a strange ecstasy, like following birds to the rim of the world and flinging oneself onto spongy turf and drinking forgetfulness, surrounded by the hoarse laughter of rooks, like riding the phosphorescence of the waves. Yes! What am I saying? This is simply not possible. The two women, if they are in this moment two women, for it is true that Shelmadine is being very much taken by Orlando, and Orlando has a document proving she is a woman. If they are two women, or almost, what could they possibly do? They lack the tools, they lack strength, they lack passion. What was that scream? Oh, this is ridiculous. No, that can't be. She can't possibly be doing that. What's happening? Shelmadine must be sitting on Orlando's hand, rigorously. They're just trying to keep warm. They are only breathing heavily near each other. Yes, yes, no. No, no, that was not a bite. They're merely swooning a little. Yes, they are just having a lovely swoon. And presently Orlando shall order a few sweets, because women are made for sweet ordering. The only passions they feel are for children and household duties. Surely they have done nothing but simply... softly brush against each other, stare wistfully into each other's eyes, and had a gentle spiritual experience. Whatever they did, they most certainly did not screw each other's brains out.
Oh, oh my God. I'm dead.
What did I tell you?
I am unmade.
Thank you.
You look smug.
Well, I suppose you do have to remember I've had a couple of centuries worth of experience. In both sexes. And in both sexes.
Did we prove anything?
Nothing definitive.
No?
Therefore, I propose we must continue investigating the matter on a regular basis. Do you, Marmaduke Bonthrop Shelmardine Esquire?
I do.
S-H-E? Orlando is spelling out letters with my fallen acorns. She? No, there's more. L? Shell? Oh, dear. In some ways, she's still quite the adolescent. The boy who lay at my feet with his terrible poems and his lovers and his dreams. How time stands still, even as it hurries on.
Things change. Things stay the same. I am alone, most nights sleepless, twisting my wedding ring round and round. Did you hear that bit about the ring? I'm married to Shell. And I'm alone, in case you're wondering, little beetle, thin crow, all you invisible creatures in the grass. I am speaking to the spirit of the age.
I thought you were speaking to me.
I am.
I'm an oak tree.
I know you are.
Am I the spirit of the age?
Yes.
If anything, am I not the spirit of every age?
Maybe you are. Anyway, you're the spirit of this age, and I am seeking the approval of the spirit of the age.
In what regard?
If your husband is always sailing around Cape Horn, is it a marriage at all? If you still wish, more than anything in the world, to write poetry, is your marriage a marriage? Somehow doubt it. Is it not so that the transaction between a writer and the spirit of the age is one of infinite delicacy? Can I be of the spirit of the age and yet remain myself? As you are forever yourself.
And as you are.
Yes. Hang it all, I am. Male or female or neither. Married or single or neither. Elizabethan or Victorian or neither. I am forever myself.
What are you doing?
I'm thinking. Am I allowed to think?
Well, it seems a woman is allowed to think as long as she's thinking of a man.
Just as she's allowed to write as long as she's only writing him little notes. Hang it, I'm going to write.
A little note?
No!
Of love?
Not as the male writers define it, no, but as me. Dare I? Hang it, I will. I'm a poet. I'll write. Done. The oak tree. My manuscript is finished. Mrs. Grimstitch.
Oh, what can I do for you, Mark?
I need a carriage at once to London.
There's just time to catch the 11:45.
The what?
Steam engine. Oh, Lady Orlando, you've been shut away with your writing. This past 20 years or so, the steam engine's made it possible to travel almost anywhere.
20 years?
You'll be in Charing Cross in no time.
Lurching, lumbering things on wheels, like buggies, but they're not. And bicycles with bells and streams of narrow women and bare-faced men threading in and out of one another. And my God, the stench and boys bawling of war coming, bawling, disaster, disaster. Everybody bloody well bawling. Still like a comforter. Awkward against my breast, I carry my manuscript. The oak tree. And it warms me. A figure approaches. A man I know amongst the sea of blank bodies. His unattractive gait, his chin held high, it's... Oh no, it can't be. Yes, it is.
Nick Green.
The Lady Orlando.
Sir Nicholas.
Indeed, I'm a knight, I'm a delit, and I'm a professor. I'm the author of a score of volumes, and in short, I am the most influential critic of the age. Will you have lunch with me?
My dear Orlando, the great days of literature are over.
We live in degenerate times. The truth is, all our young writers are in the pay of booksellers. They turn out any trash that serves to pay their bills. We must cherish the past, honor those writers, there are few of them left, who take antiquity for their model and write not for pay or fashion, but...
Tosh, literature is wild as the wind, hot as fire, swift as lightning. It's errant, incalculable, experimental, unclassifiable. Oh.
What's that? From under your dress? A manuscript?
Yes, it's a poem. A long poem.
The Oak Tree. How excessively interesting. Permit me...
It's forever since you began to read it.
Reminds me of Addison's Cato.
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, this opening compares most favorably with Thompson's Seasons.
Really?
I'm thankful to say at first skim I can find no trace of the modern spirit.
Oh, dear.
This must be published. A contract. Royalties...
I hardly know what he means.
And no time for dessert. I'll settle the bill. I must go.
He's gone. And my breast is empty. A bare place where I have carried my manuscript for... how many years? 300 or so? My heart is unshielded. And I must wire my darling Shell. My God, Shell. What if there's a gale at the Horn? The Serpentine is littered with tiny boats, skimming the waters from side to side. I launch them with my toe, and the wavelets grow as high as the Atlantic. These toys are ocean liners. No, they're your brig with its twin masts, scaling a glassy wall of water up and up and arching over, white crests with 1,000 fish and 1,000 deaths in it. I fear you're sunk off Cape Horn. Disappeared. I inhale the ocean. Take it whole into my mouth, but I can't swallow it, and it pours from my eyes.
Madam?
What is it, Mrs. Grimstitch? I'm getting rid of these books.
Shall I give you a hand?
They're all written by men, and they don't know when to stop.
Oh, I'm with you there.
What in heaven's name is that?
An automobile.
A what? It's gliding about of its own accord. Where are the horses?
An automobile has an engine, Lady Orlando.
What? My head. My heart. Everything's too bright.
You have been reading for a very long time.
I must go. I must hurry.
What about your baby?
Baby?
Your firstborn child. Your boy.
Oh. I... In heaven's name. Did I? Did I actually? How did it get so late? Why don't you look where you're going? Get out of my way!
Time is passing over me. I am racing to keep up with time.
Move!
Orlando, I am disassembled. When one motors so fast, so much resembles the chopping up small of identity, which precedes unconsciousness and perhaps death itself. God, I'm good. That was really profound. How strange it is. Nothing is any longer one thing. And nor am I. Was it ever? Was I? How many different times ticking in the mind at once? How many selves? Are they all Orlando?
From up here, a car in the courtyard. Stationary. Orlando. How many hundreds of years she's come to this place.
Good afternoon, madam. Welcome to Enderby Park Luxury Hotel and Spa.
Oh, morning, Robert. Robert? There's some things in the car. Will you bring them in? I'm going to change my clothes.
I'm sorry. Do you have a reservation? My name's actually Kirsty.
Were you Robert? Before? Once?
Possibly.
What year is this?
She wears a pair of wide-legged jeans and a leather jacket.
She hurries up the hill, clumsy as she runs through ferns and hawthorn, catching her foot on a dustbin bag. She startles a squirrel, kicks an empty bottle, scares a jackdaw. Orlando! Flying like the wind to me!
You stand higher than ever, Oak Tree. And so wide.
19 English counties at my feet.
It doesn't matter, does it? I'm completely letting go of the past. It's as if a microscope stuck to my eye. Everything's so distinct. Each separate blade of grass, grain of earth, the intricacy of your every twig and knot, those tiny mites running through the channels of your bark. Your bones are ribs beneath me. I'm sitting on the back of the world.
You're sitting on my roots.
I always have.
What's that? A book?
Hardback. Do you like the cover?
The Oak Tree? Is it about me?
It's my long poem. First edition, signed by me, of course. And yes, I suppose it is about you. I should like to bury it.
You can't. The earth's too shallow. Besides, the dogs would dig it up. Believe me, no luck ever attends these symbolical celebrations under trees.
But I've rehearsed what I'm going to say. I bury this as a tribute, a return to the land of what the land has given me. Oh dear, it sounds silly, doesn't it?
Mm.
But I thought, you see, I questioned all the praise and fame and ridiculous chatter and backbiting and owning property and not owning property and money and all that. What has that to do with this? With poetry, with its value? Isn't writing poetry a voice answering a voice? A secret transaction? And what could have been more secret, more slow, more like the intertwining of two lovers than the stammering answer I've made all these years to the old crooning song of the woods?
Night comes.
I think I'll just leave my book on the ground, dishevelled. I'll watch the view. All those lights. All my lives shaping themselves against the sky. I can make them all out. The nameless Blackamoor, Queen Elizabeth, Marushka, Stanislavska, Dagmar, Natasha, Ilyana, Romanovich. There's Constantinople and Grace and a toy boat on the Serpentine. My husband's brig. There, rising to the top of a wave, up and up, a rash, ridiculous man sailing around Cape Horn so uselessly in the teeth of a gale. I feel strange. Everything is a ghost. Everything is so... Oak Tree. Mm-hmm. Is that a bird flying through the night?
No, it's a hang glider. Coming very fast.
It's falling.
I think it's going to hit me.
Get out of the way! Get out of the way!
Oh, ouch! Be careful, will you?
Shell, it's you.
Oh, Orlando.
Shell, Medine.
What day is it?
It's the present moment.
Yes, it's the present moment. It's now.
Orlando was played by Emma Frankland and The Oak Tree by Claire Benedict. Queen Elizabeth I and the Blackamoor were played by Nina Sasanya, Mrs. Grimsditch by Kate Rutter, Euphrosyne, Sasha and Mrs. Davis by Natalie Grady. Nicholas Green and the Captain were played by Rupert Hill, Grace by Leonie Elliott, Rustum and the Narrator by Stephen Marzella, and Shelmadine by Cesare Torassi. Orlando was written by Virginia Woolf and dramatized by Amanda Dalton, Caroline Bird, Zena Edwards, Karen McCarthy Wolf, and Hannah Silver. It was a BBC Radio Drama North production, directed by Nadia Molinari.
You can find more editions of Drama on 3 on BBC Sounds. Next week, we'll be hearing Love Thy Synth by Hannah Silver.
I'm Alan Partridge. Join me on BBC One when I'll be presenting BBC One's This Time, standing in for John Barskill, who's unwell. Our thoughts are with John at this difficult time. My thoughts are also with another group of people who'll be feeling sick, namely the sneerers, the jeerers, the naysayers, the backbiters, the backstabbers, and everyone who said I'd never get another job in telly. Sharma, Dimbleby, Dimbleby's brother, my ex-wife's brother, a woman in BBC compliance called Kath or Kate or Cowan, who sneered so hard I thought her face was going to turn inside out, and the many people who'll be feeling sick as dogs when they see my face back on TV. My thoughts are with you at this difficult time.
This Time with Alan Partridge, tomorrow night at 9:30 on BBC One.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's 9 o'clock. Time for tonight's Radio 3 in Concert with Kate Mollison.
One of the great things about these Sunday evening concerts is that we get to cherry pick from the most interesting performances that have been happening all over Europe. Recordings are shared through the European Broadcasting Union, and here at Radio 3 in Concert, we take our pick to bring you the unique sound of different orchestras playing in their home concert halls. The range of colours and styles is always really fascinating. Tonight we've got a Mozart double concerto with the RTE National Symphony Orchestra in Dublin. And we'll start with a Finnish orchestra, Finnish soloist, Finnish conductor, all playing Finnish music at home in Finland. This is the mystical second cello concerto by Eino Juhani Rautavaara. Its title is Towards the Horizon. The cellist is Marko Ylönen with the Helsinki Philharmonic Orchestra and Klaus Mäkelä conducting.